Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Send it up into the sky. We're calling it Parks and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Welcome, everybody, to Parks and Recollection. As usual, it is I. That's what my mom, the English teacher, would want. It is I, Rob Lowe. Not it is me. It is I. I'm going with that. It is I, Rob Lowe, otherwise known as Rollo, and the great Alan Yang is with me as usual.
What's up, Rollo? By the way, isn't it? It is me. I don't know. I'm not a grammarian, but I think it's me. I think it is. It is me. Anyway, it's in the predicate of the sentence. I don't know. I really don't
know. I can tell you one thing. You went to Harvard. I didn't. I'm going with you. I'm changing.
I'm redoing it.
It is me.
It is me. It's me. Well, who's better at grammar than Mario? He says it's me, Mario. So that's really who we should be listening to. So we'll go with Mario here.
Yeah, right, for sure. We got a good one today.
Another good one. Very comedy forward. A lot. By the way, I was halfway through this episode. I was like, there's still more twists. There's a lot of twists in this one too. Like, just keeps developing in a story that keeps developing. If I were Pert Hapley, and a story that won't stop developing. Very busy episode in the middle of season three. Shall we get to the details?
Let's go.
All right. Episode title: Jerry's Painting, written by the legendary Norm Hiscock. We got to talk Norm today. We got to get him on the pod. He's Canadian dude, chill dude. There since season one. Co-created Kids in the Hall with those guys, has just been doing it forever. He does that show Space Force with Greg Daniels. Now, anyway, love Norm, directed by Dean Holland. Of course, we love Dean. He's been on the show before. Original air date, April 28th, 2011. The summary of the episode: Chris deals with community uproar over Jerry's new painting, which features a nude Leslie. And Ben tries to help teach Andy and April responsibility after he moves in with them. Nope's notes. The original broadcast ran 10 minutes longer than usual because it followed an extended episode of The Office, which featured the last appearance by lead actor Steve Carell. Rumor has it this Office episode hurt Parks ratings more than they helped. So I don't know if that's true or not. We'd have to go back and dive through the numbers. Other Nope's notes: first appearance of Mara Marini as Brandy Max, the porn parody version of Leslie. Actor Biff Yeager plays electrician George Williams. Biff also portrayed Lieutenant Commander Argyle on Star Trek The Next Generation, and his trading card has a price bubble that mysteriously keeps growing bigger and bigger. Those are deep cut Nope's notes. I love that. Who's into the, can I ask who's into the Star Trek Next Generation card prices?
Bubble?
Okay, great. I think it's Schulte. So that is an unbelievable piece of trivia. So
why do you think his card is worth more than others?
We'll get Schulte on. So Schulte used to produce the Greatest Gem podcast, which is a Star Trek podcast, but I maybe it's rare or something. Maybe it's like I don't know.
It's because he played George Williams.
Yeah, an electrician on this show. By the way, we have a correction on the grammar here.
Oh, yes. But hit me.
Traditional grammar rule states, this is from Greg Levine, when a pronoun follows a linking verb, such as is, the pronoun should be in the subject case. It's also called the nominative. That means it is correct to say it is I. There's no way that's true. There's no way that's true. Tell it to Mario. He's not saying it's a E, it's a I, Mario.
It is I.
It's a I, Mario. Well,
it is I, Mario. That
yeah,
doesn't work.
I mean, that's
that's not, well, first of all, it's not very on brand for him.
It is I, Mario. Oh man, we'll see. Hey, we'll see when Pratt voices Mario in the Mario movie, right? Isn't he doing that?
Yes, he is.
How is this dude Mario and Garfield? I love that's range, baby. That's range.
I know, it was the best. I saw Pratt recently. What is it? That's the cat that he's in. What is it? What is he into? And what? And Pratt's like, he's into sausages. Is that what?
No, wait. You're gonna get him blown up. You're gonna get the Garfield fans after this dude. He has to know that he likes lasagna.
I'm sorry. It's lasagna. It's okay. Lasagna. But yes. I was like, it's sausage. And Pratt was like, it's lasagna.
Oh, he knew.
Like,
who knew?
Like, okay. He knew.
Okay, good.
Oh,
okay.
No. He was like he deeply offended that I didn't know.
I mean, he hates Mondays and he loves lasagna.
And I was like, look, Pratt, I can't keep up with all your iconic in your voiceover work. What do you know?
Hey, man, he's the Lego dude. Yeah, I love it. I love it. But it is funny. I mean, we should do a Garfield podcast as well. He hates Odie. He hates Nermal. He loves lasagna. Okay.
So good.
All right. We got it. Let's get going on the synopsis. Yep. We could talk grammar and Garfield and Mario all day, but let's get into the synopsis. Yeah. Leslie Knope feels powerless at work because a policy set by Chris Traeger, which forbids workplace romances, is preventing her from dating Ben Wyatt. Meanwhile, now that he's staying in Pawnee permanently, Ben decides to move out of the motel where he's been living. Andy Dwyer and April Ludgate offer him a spare room in their house since their previous roommate moved out and left the house to them. Although the two have been living by themselves for only a week, the house is a complete mess with no everyday items like plates or utensils available. Ben decides to teach a reluctant Andy and April how to properly live like adults. So this beginning to the story really made me laugh because all due respect to the show. It's a great writing staff. We understand Mike is a great showrunner. It's a good writing staff. But the idea that Ben Wyatt, an adult man who is very smart and like is an account, like was an accountant and like has a great job and like, decides to move in with these two numbskulls is so funny to me. Like you like that is TV. That you have to understand. That is one of the just keep them in the world. It's just like keep them in the world. Keep Andy and April in the world. And like it ends up being really funny. By the way, I think it makes it all worth it. It's a little bit silly. He wouldn't do this, but you know what? This isn't a real documentary. We have Ben make this silly choice, and then you just kind of live with it, in my opinion. But it's very funny.
Listen, I'll go you one further. Like I said in the last podcast, I never bought into the workplace rule.
I never did.
I always felt like it was complete phony baloney stakes to keep Leslie and Ben from being together, I had to carry that water for episodes.
You had to carry it a lot. And sometimes I will say this. If you like a show or maybe even love a show and you love the characters, you love the comedy, you love the actors, and you love a lot of the jokes, you can get over stuff like that. Because again, like hopefully you're not looking to this for it to be a literal documentary or textbook about what it means to be a low-level government employee in South Central Indiana or whatever it is. You know, in this case, it's like I went with it. You know, I was like watching this. It's like, you know what? The comedy with Ben and April and Andy was great. It's really funny. Like all that shit was so funny. So I don't know. I really enjoy this.
And the other thing is when you're doing an ensemble, as you alluded to just now, is you have to figure out ways to come up with combinations of people. Well, why would they be together? Well, the classic is Rashida is the nurse.
Yes.
When they were like, wait, I'm sorry, we don't want to go to the hospital.
One of the most difficult challenges, in the show was, it's already difficult. You know, we have 10 characters in the show. And so it's like, okay, this episode, it's Chris, Andy, and Donna, or whatever it is, right? It's like, why are they together? Yeah, look, you're making a show. You're making a show. And so you do the best you can to make it realistic, and TV has changed a little bit. But I don't know. To me, it was so enjoyable, so fast and fun that it didn't really bother me. What I did enjoy was this talking hand that you have at the very beginning of the episode. And it's so funny because it's a joke that's not a joke. The setup is the surprise. You know, comedy, they say something. Comedy is about surprise sometimes.
Yes.
And in this case, you set it up as if you have some magic formula about being great at setting people up, and then your answer is so obvious. Like that's the joke, right?
What,
it's essentially like you know, I'm good at setting people up. What I do, it's something along the lines of, I look at what people's most admirable qualities are, and then I try to find someone whose qualities are compatible, and I bring them together. Like, so it's just literally like, it's just what the most logical thing anyone would do, right? It's like, I try to find two people that would like each other and bring them together. That's essentially the joke. And so that kind of joke is all just in the delivery. That's literally you having to just sell and play it straight, by the way. Like, play it straight. Like, you really
believe
it. And
super excited. Like, it's like, I'm going to impart some amazing knowledge
that
you never would have thought. That's a great comedy move that I love, where the pretext is, I'm about to bestow insane knowledge that only I can give to you. And then it's something that everybody in the world already knows.
Yes.
It's always a great move.
it's really, really funny. And it's kind of a tried and true kind of type of joke, but there's a specificity to that and specificity to the performance that really worked for me. There's also a weird thing I want to point out, which is, this is for the real nerds in there. For you guys to know, like, there's a scene where Ben first talks to Tom in the courtyard that sets up the B story, where Ben is like, I need a place to live. Can I live with, you know, how's your place, etc. The scene begins with something that's almost never done in the show, which is a tilt down from the sky. So, in this show, there's no establishing shots. Establishing shots, there's very few establishing shots. There are, but it's like, you know, wide or something to start the scene. We start from the sky, and then we see the cupola of Pawnee City Hall, which is Pasadena City Hall. And then it tilts down in the courtyard to see Ben walk in and talk to Tom. What people maybe don't know about this is that courtyard is inside a soundstage. So I guess what we did, I didn't edit this episode, but I guess they tilted down from just the ceiling and then later replaced it with the sky in post. So this was to sell that the courtyard was actually outdoors. Look at the scene. See if you can see where the seams are. See if you can see, because it is not outdoors. They're inside a stage.
Why now? Why in this particular episode?
Maybe they had a VFX. Maybe it was like a Brewster's Million like VFX budget thing. They had to just get rid of some money. But yeah.
What do you say, Levine? Funny. What do you got there? You got some answers?
Well, you telling the story, Alan, triggered this memory I have from the room when Dean came in saying he had this idea, because he directed this episode, had the idea for this shot. And like, I think we can do this. And it makes me want to have Dean back actually to talk about this. And
we got to.
Because I think he was quite proud of this idea that we could use the set, you know, our stage to actually do something that we could normally not do. So he was quite proud of that.
I will say this, Dean, as we all know, grew and grew and grew as a director. And he was probably watching films and watching like things that were more complicated to direct in some ways visually with effects and all that stuff. And, you know, you often do this when you're shooting a different kind of show that's not a mockumentary. So he probably got excited and like, yeah, why not do it? I'm not complaining about the shot. It was funny to me that, this episode, I mean, he was directing is probably one of the reasons why, but it wasn't like, this is the finale and we're like blowing it out. It was like, no, just kind of a random episode in the middle of the season. Like, we're going to do this. Anyway, take a look at that. And shout out to Dean for coming up with that idea. Okay, yeah, this is a little piece of trivia that Greg Levine points out. There's a scene at 4:25 where April spits her gum into Andy's mouth. And this was not scripted. So this must have been something she just did to Pratt on the day, which is honestly quite horrifying. Basically probably needed an intimacy coordinator to be on set.
That's right.
But no, I think they were buddies and it was all good. But it looks like she's about to break immediately afterwards and she does not. So, you know, that's just another thing. That's one of the hazards and joys of working with Aubrey is you might get gum spit in your mouth.
You never know what's going to happen.
Shout out to a couple of these rules for living with them. I thought these were really funny. We'll rifle through them quickly. No front door use, must crawl in the back window. No personal phone conversations. If you speak to April in Spanish, you must use the formal usted. You can't use electricity after 6 p.m. If you watch a sad movie, you have to wear mascara so we see if you cry. No noise allowed on Mondays and no TV after breakfast. But this whole scene was really fun to me because Pratt is like, we leave TV on all the time. You know, when we leave the house, we leave it on. So it seems like we're home when we're not. It's an idea I'm trying to patent, he says. But yeah, honestly, this B story, we'll get into it more, but I thought it was gold. I thought it was really, really funny. We'll continue on the synopsis. Meanwhile, the park's employees attend an art show exhibiting paintings that will later be hung in government buildings. Jerry displays his painting of the fictional topless centaur Greek goddess Diaphana, which looks exactly like Leslie. Jerry explains he subconsciously painted Leslie while thinking about powerful women. Instead of being embarrassed, Leslie feels empowered by the painting. Tom, however, is humiliated because a pot-bellied cherub in the painting shares his likeness. The next day, local conservative activist Marsha Langman, played by Darlene Hunt, compares the painting to bestiality, deems it unsuitable for a government setting, and demands it be destroyed.
I loved this whole bit. I loved it. I loved the painting. The picture, Tom's little cherub is so funny. It was one of those things that just shooting it, I could just stare at the painting of him as this cherub and laugh. It was absolutely genius.
It's very funny. I like feel like this was kind of a breakthrough moment in the writer's room. And it was like once the painting idea was pitched, it was like people building and building and building.
Yeah.
I also want to point out a little Easter egg of look at the deer in the lower right hand corner of the painting, because its face is very fucked up. It looks like it's like a wolf or a dog or a bear in addition to being a deer. Anyway, kudos to the props department. They have to do a lot of shit to get stuff like that together. In fact, they had to make two paintings, spoiler alert. But it's the deer is messed up in the face. Just take a look at it. It looks like a very strange hybrid animal.
I also like how Leslie is the goddess is like that Jerry and that Jerry painted, like it's like sort of like creepy and weird.
There's a lot going on psychologically with the old Jer Bear, huh?
Oh, it's yeah. Like well, you know, it's established he likes his blondes, you know. Look,
that's
at Christy
true
Brinkley.
Man, that's true. I mean, it's really I love also, like, it's kind of been established that he's a painter, because there's an episode I believe in Go Big or Go Home. He's painting by the lake, and yep. He's painting like a beautiful painting. And I think Leslie throws it into the lake. So if you're really thinking about it, you know, it's been established. It doesn't come out of nowhere. It does come out of nowhere how fast he ends up painting these, but we'll leave that for the future.
Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Now, Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved, which is awesome, and they're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So, no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals.
So, so good. I love this stuff. With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you will always have new flavors to explore to help you crush your wellness goals. And let me tell you what I crush. They have a smoky bacon and cheddar egg bite that is good. I tried their shakes also, and they were so good. Oh, I'm a Factor fan.
Head to factormeals.com/parksandrex50 and use code parksandrex50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code parksandrex50 at factormeals.com/parksandrex50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in LA, a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in LA, debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Yeah, always fun to have Marsha Langman return from the SSFS.
She's so good. So funny. So
very
brand.
Funny. She was in the Pawnee Zoo episode when Leslie married the gay penguins. And it's always helpful to have her as a character because she can be an antagonist, like pretty clear cut, you know, proxy for, you know, people who don't want to have any fun. People don't
stick in the
fun.
Mud. As
stick
they
in
say.
The mud. Yeah, it was also like season one. Leslie was a little bit of a stick in the mud. And later on, we created other sticks in the mud that she could fight against. So mm-hmm. That was kind of a difference between the seasons. Greek gods and goddesses, Rob. You got any thoughts, Rolo? What your favorite Greek gods and goddesses are?
I think this is going to be another abstention for me. I don't want to offend any of the Greek gods or
you're
goddesses.
You're afraid of offending the other gods.
Yes, I would. I would never, never, ever dare to exalt one over the other.
Yes, it's actually. Is it true?
But
that,
I will say though, if I had to pick, I would. It might be Poseidon, because I really like that movie they made about him.
Well, there you go, right? Wasn't
the Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, Poseidon. I thought you were talking about Wrath of the Titans or Clash of the Titans or, you know, what was that? Release the Kraken movie?
What is it? It's with Harry Hamlin.
There's more movies about Greek gods than you might think. Hercules. I mean, he's a demigod, but there's a lot of
Xena will show up on a show.
Xena shows up on the show. Ron dates her. I don't think she's, is she a god? No, she just, I don't know. She's a warrior princess. She's not a god, yeah. But is it true? Do you guys know? I don't know. Like, isn't Zeus appearing in the Thor movies now? I think Zeus is showing up. I think it's played by Russell Crowe, maybe. But anyway.
That sounds about right. That sounds about right.
Yeah. Saving them. Saw Jeff Goldblum at dinner the other day. He's in those movies. Anyway, little side tangent. Really, truly, he was at Mother Wolf. Anyway, what else we got here? We love Ron's welcome speech at the art show. By the way, the art show is like one of those premises that like, okay, we need another venue for like, what do they do in the Parks and Rec department? It was an eternal struggle, and the writers were like, what are the other things they do? It's like, they'll throw an art show. There'll be like an art exhibition. But I really enjoyed this speech. I'll go through it a little bit, but you know, Ron just standing up because Leslie makes him do the speech. This room has several paintings in it. Some are big, some are small. People did them and they're here now. I believe that after this is over, they'll be hung in government buildings. Why the government is involved in an art show is beyond me. I also think it's pointless for a human to paint scenes of nature when they could just go outside and stand in it. Anyway, please do not misinterpret the fact that I'm talking right now as genuine interest in art and attempt to discuss it with me further. End of speech. Classic. There's like five on-character jokes there.
It's amazing. It's great. That's just a genius speech.
Really good. And by the way, we already did an art episode with the camel. So it's like another art episode. So we had to like get your other round of art jokes in. But anyway, I also like your talking head, Chris. Not talking head, where you're open. We want to establish that you were not a stick in the mud or a prude. And so I think we did that by going beyond and saying like, I'm not opposed to nudity in art. Like I've posed nude. I performed a nude production of Cats, which is really a wild cap to that joke. It's like, you have?
It's such that I love that moment. I really wish if we could go back and do any Parks that we would just at least do a flashback of Chris Traeger as a nude Mr. Mistopheles.
I was going to say Mr. Mistopheles was my pick as well.
Yes.
Come Who on. Played Mr. Mistopheles in the new Cats movie? All I can remember is James Corden.
Yeah, I think it might be James Corden.
Yeah. Well,
He
was not nude. All right, let's continue on. Leslie goes on the news program. You heard with Pird, one of our favorites, to rouse public support for the painting by portraying it as a depiction of powerful woman. However, she's undermined when reporter Pird Hapley also has on adult film actress Brandy Max, who defends the painting by comparing it to pornography. Chris convenes a meeting of the Pawnee Public Arts Commission to rule on whether the painting is acceptable. Despite Leslie's eloquent defense, the commission fears the nudity is offensive and decides to destroy it instead of risking public backlash. Leslie retaliates by stealing the painting. I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, we kind of worked backwards on this one where the idea was she goes on Pert Hapley, a porn star appears with her, and then it's like, yeah, we're the same, right? You and me are together on this. Like, this is like, we're the same kind of person. But wasn't there an origin of that? Like, someone, God, I can't remember what that the original story was, but it was basically the idea of someone putting their arm around you and defending you, but then you're like, wait a minute, I'm not on the same page as this person. Like that's kind of where the origin of the story was, but I'm blanking on what the original origin of, because I think there was like a real life instance of this or something. I just remember that was kind of the kernel of it, and I remember also the debate over the Justice Potter Stewart quote about I know pornography when I see it, which by the way ends with the wildest, maybe the dirtiest joke in Parks and Rec history, where Brandy Mac says, for me it's when the penis goes in, which is like, I almost feel uncomfortable even saying that. Like, I'm just quoting the show. This aired on NBC. I that's unbelievably filthy. Like, I didn't write that line. I don't know. But she just says it in the show. I was like, god damn, the Park's going hard on this.
It's funny. It's funny.
There's also So another Pird has a lot of lines in this. Pird has a lot of jokes in this. Yeah. He says, what some would say are human breasts. He also asks, are centaurs real? Which is, like, I think there's a hidden underbelly of Pird where it's like, is he a human being or not? Like, yeah. Is he an alien in human clothing? Like, this is very possible.
Yeah, I wouldn't put anything past Pird happily.
And this is one of the episodes where Leslie actually misbehaves in one of the most, I think, egregious ways, right? She steals the painting and then she tricks Marsha Langman later. Like, it's, I kind of like it. Yeah. She's on a kind of a run of like misbehaving, which is like, you know, as we say, we sometimes want to mix it up and have her be bad, right?
And I just love when Polar gets to play that kind of mania.
Yes.
You know, when she gets to play that like devilish sort of mania is just a great gear. She does really
well. She's very mischievous. She has an impish quality and she's very likable doing bad things. You know, yes. It's like, it's just very, it's like she manages to make it likable. You want to see her screw up. It's kind of fun. And she has a very winning quality to that. So, one of the things, and by the way, that's something that you sometimes deal with the network and studio, is they don't want your main character to do bad things. Yes. And then the old thing is like, they're not likable. Like, make sure we see that they're a good person or they're good at their job.
Well, you know the phrase, right? The phrase is, you have to protect the character.
Yes, protect the characters. I mean, I bring it up sometimes too, but
yeah.
But it's a balance. It's, you don't want them to be horrible. But I think the writer's sort of answer to that usually is, we don't want the character to be likable. We want them to be compelling. We want them to be interesting. We want them to be complicated. We want them to be psychologically complex and sort of watchable, compulsively watchable, right? It's like, is Tony Soprano likable? It's like, you kind of just, you're intrigued. He's doing weird stuff. You know, it's like, what is he doing? Yep. Yeah, no one's like, Walter White, man, that guy's likable. He's a monster. Right. He's like, he's not likable enough. What if he, instead of dealing drugs, he's a good teacher? but it doesn't come up that often anymore, but sometimes. Let's continue on. Meanwhile, after cleaning up around the house, Ben gives Andy and April money to buy common household items. Although they almost waste their money on frivolous items, Andy insists they need to take Ben's advice. April admits she's afraid of growing up because she doesn't want them to lose their unique personalities, but Andy assures her they will not change. I really enjoy these Andy and April jokes when they're eating turkey chili off of Frisbees. Was a funny thing that I really enjoyed. And then when they come back, I really enjoy the sequence where, he's like, did you buy, Ben's there, then Andy and April come home and he's like, well, did you buy the stuff that you need? And then Andy pulls out the marshmallow shooter and fires marshmallows at him for like a minute. And he's like, does that answer your question? And then there's that perfect Adam Scott pause and he goes, no. it doesn't answer my question. But it's like, it's just I don't know. Again, that story got me. I was like, they're going to real Bed Bath & Beyond, like buying stuff. And, yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Relatable.
Yeah, but there's also the bit where another just Adam bit that I really enjoyed was he says, I have full confidence in you. You're going to spend that money. You're going to buy the right stuff. They leave and then he has a talking head. He's like, there's a 30% chance they'll both die. Which is just like so a classic, like he's just fixated on this. We talked about this a little bit. This is a really clean split between A and B story. So like sometimes it's really hard. I actually think that's an easier way to write stories because it, as opposed to characters are crossing over in between, like that is so difficult. That is so difficult. And like, this is such a strange, like this is my own personal tangent in terms of figuring out writing, directing, all that stuff. Like this happened really early on for me because like you don't really have a conception of structure, I think, a lot of times if you're a total novice. And like watching Star Wars or any of those movies, there's a power to cross-cutting. There's a power to cutting in between stories. And if you structure it correctly and pace it correctly, you can build momentum by cutting in between stories. Yeah. And sometimes you'll see shows that find their sea legs by figuring out what kind of quantity of story to put in each section, if that makes sense. And like, if you watch I don't know, Star Wars is a weird example, but there's sequences where like, oh my God, it's building because you're cutting between stories, which is a little counterintuitive,
yeah.
But there's just this power to that. And, you know, sometimes it gets complicated. Sometimes we'll break stories and like Ron is in two different stories. It's like, I don't think it's going to work. Like you can't do it time-wise, first of all, but it's also like, it's just kind of messy. It's kind of muddy. And so, you know, oftentimes you'll have stories like this, which is the alternative, which is it's a total clean demarcation between the two. And then you get in a situation where sometimes one story has too many beats. And then it's like, oh shit, we have four A story beats in a row. That also becomes a problem. And that might happen all the way up into the edit room. You might be in the edit room. It's like, we need a B story beat here, but we don't have one. So that stuff needs to be figured out. But I found that stuff to be kind of fun problem solving in some ways.
You know, I was looking through the notes just now to remind myself some things, and I saw, Alan, we were talking about that specifically when we had very clean A and B stories, and they're like, what's Chris going to be doing in this, and what's Ron going to be doing? This were two of the focuses, right?
Yeah.
And Chris shows up, you know, helpfully, I think, to guide the, you know, the ethics of the story along, and there was going to be a very small run, or perhaps where Ron was going to commission a piece of art from Jerry, and like, just to give him something, but then you just watch the episode.
Yeah. He's very light on Ron.
He has enough.
Yeah. Then you watch. It's like, okay, he has enough. And that's the thing. You're also servicing so many characters and so many actors. It's like, so that's part of it too. Okay. So Chris angrily demands Leslie bring the painting to City Hall the next day to be destroyed. When Leslie reluctantly agrees to do so, Jerry expresses disappointment that she would give up so easily. Feeling empowered again, Leslie asks Jerry to quickly paint another similar painting, only this time with Tom as the centaur. Leslie tells Marcia the new painting is the original one, but painted over. With no more nudity in the painting, a frustrated Marcia gives up her quest to have the painting destroyed. Ben later confides to Andy that he likes Leslie, but is unable to ask her out because of Chris. But Andy tells him if they truly care about each other, then it will eventually happen. Yeah, man, this is, again, I really enjoyed the B story, the development of Andy April as fully formed characters. It's cool to see Andy like do something. Again, you have all this comedy from him, but he's like, he's not a total idiot at the end. And you see them kind of mature a tiny bit, right? And that's character development, right? We talked about like in the writers' room, we would talk about the vectors these characters are going on and how they're growing over the course of the season in the series. And one of them was April and Andy kind of maturing a tiny bit, obviously not changing, but you know, it's literally kind of alluded to, you know, in the episode. They actually have a conversation about that.
It's always a good episode when Andy gets to say a line like, is your penis between the front arms or the back legs regarding the final
the
painting?
The centaur painting. Yeah. I also saw it as like commentary of like, oh, you know what? Like if a guy's topless, it's fine. You can put that in the thing. Like looking back on it with a 2022 lens, yeah. It's like, yeah, it's just kind of like, oh, you could change it to a male torso and it's totally fine. But also, yeah, it was pointed out, we were about to talk about this earlier, but Jerry, an extremely fast artist, because he painted that new one in like seconds. A little bit of a story flaw if you think about it too hard, but maybe he had like tracing paper or something. Maybe he was like tracing it over, but it kind of strains credulity. Leslie and Tom are on the phone at the end with Gail. It's just funny to imagine that it's Christie Brinkley on the other end, because she had not yet been introduced, I believe. So,
yeah, we didn't know who it would be.
Didn't know who it would be.
You probably had a lot of different ideas in your head.
Didn't know who it would be. Final thoughts on the app, Rolo?
This is one where I wish I had stolen at least one of the paintings.
Yeah. Where are those?
That would be really fun to have. Do you know where it is, Greg?
I remember reading an interview a few years ago, and I'm pretty sure Amy actually still has the mural, the painting, not the mural, excuse me, of Diafina.
Oh, wow.
She should.
I got to ask her. That's the right person to have it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very funny episode. We're in the pocket here. We're in the pocket. It's peak Parks. Peak Parks. We're in the zone. We're in the zone. Very funny episode. Oops moment. The adjusted painting looks similar to Tom, but has six-pack abs. That's an oops because, as we all know, Aziz in real life has eight-pack abs. That's a joke. That's a joke that was written in there. It's not. I assure you, I was at a pool party with him yesterday. He does not have eight pack abs. Guy likes to eat. He's a skinny guy, but he got a little bit of a belly.
Cleaning up my photos on my phone and came across a photo of Aziz and I sitting in my jacuzzi.
Yes.
And which, by the way, it's such an odd, random, it just made me smile. It's like just Aziz and I just chilling in the jacuzzi.
It's so funny, man. He always is scared because his dad has a little bit of a belly. His dad's a tiny man, but he's always like, I don't want to get a belly like my dad, because it's like, it's genetic. So it's like, he's always scared about that. It's like, you know, he's eating a lot. So
yeah, yeah.
All right, episode MVP, most valuable Pawnean. Which character moment in this episode sticks out the most to you and why?
This is a tough one because a lot of people have really good stuff in this.
I know. I'm really torn. I almost want to give it to Jerry because he painted the painting.
I was going to say Jerry,
but,
too.
You know, he gets his name in the title. He's just kind of, and I, you know, this one, he's just kind of sweet. It's just kind of like he carries a little bit. This is a shout out to Jim. Jim was a guest on the show. Let's give this one to Jerry.
Yep. I'm with you. Jim O'Hare, MVP.
All right. Listeners, let us know who your MVP was by tweeting Team Coco Podcast or using the hashtag Parks and Recollection. Shall we take a trip to the town hall?
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Today it's a town howl.
Oh, it's a howl.
It's
today.
A howl.
You know,
it's
I love howl. Those howls. Where should we howl?
I think we can be topical. Let's do it at the Public Arts Commission. We never do it there. We're going to do it in front of the Public Arts Commission, and they're going to... I like our casting on this too. We're like trying to get kind of artsy looking people, but not really.
Yeah.
So let's do it in front of the commission and see what they think about this town howl. Should we play that down, Schulte?
Howl away.
Hey, Rob and Alan, it's Jared from Columbus, Ohio. I'm a huge fan of everything on Parks and Rec that's made it to the screen, but I'm particularly fascinated by the stuff that hits the cutting room floor, especially the bloopers and the times when the cast gets a case of the giggles. Two questions for you. What's the worst case of the giggles that you can remember on set? And how did you and the cast compose yourselves to get back on track and finish the scene? I can only imagine the struggles you had with this group. Thanks, fellas.
I think, well, you know, as I always say, I think that there's a school of comedy that kind of looks down on the fact that you break when you act in comedy. Like, it's a badge of honor to not break. And there are those people who famously can't be broken. I am one, and I'm one of them. And that's why you never, and in the gag reels at the end of the year, I'm never in them because I will not break.
Wow.
I take it as a badge of honor. But that said, there's an episode which we will get to where we all have food poisoning and we're writhing around on the floor of my office. And Adam Scott is doing like crawling like a worm to like pick up a phone or something. And I could not keep it together. I could not keep it
That's
together.
That's great. I did notice that. I think you almost never broke. Because it's like, we had a pretty good cast. Our cast didn't break a ton. But some people were more guilty than others. Some people broke a lot more. But I don't feel like you broke a lot. I feel like I remember that scene. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, like, sometimes it's just like the physical stuff. Sometimes I think it's physical stuff or like stuff that's a little blue or something that you just don't normally hear, like...
Yeah.
A really well-written joke. Like, sometimes it's really funny in the cut. It's great for the show, but it's not going to make you break. It's usually the weird stuff. Like, the stuff, or you see someone, they're wearing something weird, and, like, they're just having to do something embarrassing. Like, that to me, like, often gets the actors to break. Another example of this that I remember on set was, also involved Adam, where it's a scene where Joan Calamezzo, it's him and Aziz and Joan Calamezzo. Joan Calamezzo, you know, Adam had to, she's excusing herself to go to the bathroom. And he's like, are you going to powder your vagina? Like, it was just him saying that. Like, it was basically that she was implying that. That was like the previous line. I'm not selling it correctly. But the three of them just could not get through this. Like, and it's that thing where it's like, okay, no, never mind. You laugh. Like, this time. It's that 10 times, right? It's like, it's really funny, right?
It's like, it is like seasickness. Like, yes. Like once one person gets a case of the giggles, it can be contagious.
Yes.
And that's fun. But if you, encourage you all to go on YouTube, and there are, I think our gag reel bloopers are on there, and they're pretty funny. They're pretty fun to watch.
And you'll find it. And Greg Levine, alerts me to the real line, which is Joan Calamezzo is excusing herself, and she says, I'm going to go powder my nose amongst other things. And then Ben says, is she going to go powder her vagina? Which is, I mean, it's just, again, it's him saying the truth, right? Which is like, but it's just that, it's literally that, which is like, whatever, you get the joke, but for whatever reason, I don't know, I think you can see outtakes from that scene. So I don't know the food poisoning one is in there, but it's, again, I can only imagine, like, again, these things, and it's like, it's contagious too. It's contagious. Yeah. So
and
you
fun.
Really get
and
that.
Always fun when it happens.
Always fun until it goes too far. And then it gets fun again. And and yes, then you got to make your day. But usually we're making our day. So it's okay. Thank you very much, Jared, from Columbus, for sending that town howl in. Please send in all your future questions, email them, send in voicemails, all that stuff. Great episode, Rollo.
Yeah, really fun. And we're back next week with another one of my favorites. We're not going to talk about it right now. You have to go subscribe and come back and, you know, do your thing to see the next episode.
That's right. Thanks for listening. Subscribe where you get your podcast. 5-star review on Apple. Thanks to Schulte and Greg. And goodbye from Pawnee.
And we will see you next week.
Parks and Recollection is produced by Greg Levine and me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Alan Yang for Alan Yang Productions, Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers. The theme song is by Mouse Rat, a.k.a. Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.